Hello everybody, I'm George from Ireland. Well, thank you for coming back to the channel, or indeed for the very first time. This is about the centenary of the Rapallo Pact. Well, the final act was signed on the 1st of December 1925, so I'm a fortnight after the actual signing, and that's why there's the Locarno Suite in the Office for Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Affairs in London. But the Locarno Treaties, or the Locarno Pact, as we sometimes say, was signed in Locarno, Switzerland, hence its name, or sort of agreed there, really, but the final signing in London. And you learn about this in GCSE history if you do the International Relations course, but often simplified as, say, the Treaty of Locarno. That's not quite accurate. It's really a series of different agreements. And this was about settling the New World Order in the wake of the First World War. The post-bellum period had meant revision of international frontiers, new sovereign states coming to being, such as Czechoslovakia, others ones of them reanimated, such as Poland, which had existed as a sovereign state for many centuries and had disappeared off the map for about 150 years before the end of the First World War. All right, so, and this was done with the encouragement of the League of Nations. So it involved a number of fairly important European countries: Czechoslovakia, which is now two, Slovakia and Czechia, Poland, the Kingdom of Italy, it then had a king, Belgium, the United Kingdom, France, and Germany, the Weimar Republic in those days. I mean, that wasn't its official title, but is after the Second Reich and before the Third Reich, that period of German history, the Weimar Republic. So it was trying to calm things down after the First World War, make sure there's no revanchisme, ensure that Germany would accept its frontiers permanently, because when they'd agreed to them in June 1919 at the Treaty of Versailles, people said, well, they did that under duress because had they not signed, the Allies would have renewed the war. But here that threat was lifted, and indeed the British Army had withdrawn from Western Germany. The French were still there. Remember, they were entitled to stay there until 1934. Assuming that the Germans behaved themselves, and if they did, the French were gradually withdrawing. But after 1934, the Rhineland was to be demilitarized permanently, as in no German troops or weapons would be left there ever, because that would be a menace to France. So Germany had lost 13% of its land area under the Treaty of Versailles. Of Germany proper. All its overseas colonies had been confiscated by the League of Nations and mandates given to countries such as Australia, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, France and South Africa, indeed Belgium, to administer this for the betterment of the inhabitants and to lead them towards independence. So Germany was trying to go along with this policy of fulfillment, as in abiding by its obligations pursuant to the Treaty of Versailles. And Gustav Stresemann, who'd briefly been Chancellor in 1923, by this age foreign minister, said, we don't have the strength to get out of the Versailles system, so the only thing is to live with it and then gradually win back the trust of the international community. And that'll also still stimulate economic growth to de-escalate the situation. Military options were not open to Germany. The military was so restricted by Versailles, so they couldn't be throwing their weight around. And Germany also wanted peace. He didn't want another war. Now, he said he would like to get back some of the land in the east, which had been lost to Poland, but realized that there was no military strategy by which they could do that. He wanted to bring an end to this reparation system, and he wanted to persuade the French to leave the Rhineland ahead of schedule. And in some of this, because he was successful. France really didn't want another war. Remember, they fought a war against Germany in 1870 as well. They often call it the Franco-Prussian War, but really it was all 36 states, which then became the Second Reich, and so forth. Okay, so they met in Switzerland, a neutral country, has eventually inspired such confidence that the French withdrew from Cologne, and then they accelerated the withdrawal from the Rhineland. Indeed, they pulled out slightly ahead of schedule. Yeah, this is despite the fact that the Allies realized that Germany is already breaking the terms of Versailles regarding its armed forces. Germany has allowed 100,000 troops in its army maximum, but was already breaking that, and so forth. And despite a public protest, there was no appetite to enforce anything against them. So Stresemann was suggesting to the French and to the British that they could sign a new treaty to improve relations between them. So obviously it's a very high level delegation were there, Stresemann and the new Chancellor Hans Luther as well, France's Foreign Minister Aristide Briand, sometime Prime Minister as well, and the British Foreign Secretary Austen Chamberlain, and this is very shortly before he died, the elder half-brother of Neville Chamberlain, and they had the same father, not the same mother, and so forth. Austen Chamberlain, notably the only Conservative leader in the 20th century besides William Hague, not to become Prime Minister. And the Belgians sent their Foreign Minister, Emile van der Velde, and Mussolini, Prime Minister of Italy, went along sometimes, but mostly it was a senator called Vittorio Sciorja who represented them. The Poles had their Foreign Minister, Aleksander Skirski, and the Czech, the Slovak Foreign Minister, Edvard Beneš, was there, later president of Czechoslovakia. So to cut a long story short, the Germans accepted their Western frontier. They'd lost Eupen and Malmedy to Belgium. They'd lost Alsace-Lorraine to France. And they said, we should never seek to recover that. That's it. That's settled for all time. That very much mollified the Belgians and the French. We do not accept our Eastern frontier, as in with Czechoslovakia and Poland. But we shall only seek the revision of that border through exclusively Pacific means. Now, how on earth would you get land back from Czechoslovakia and Poland without fighting or threatening to fight? Could be diplomacy. But why the Poles? Why the Czechoslovaks? Why do you give it up? Because you get what in return? They're going to say something nice. Money, trade advantages. Germany might demilitarize the area. The Germans might support them with regard to other issues and so forth. But it wouldn't be easy. Population exchange, something like that. So they all said that we're going to guarantee these borders. Another thing is obviously it's a slight gain for Germany. They didn't even lose even more in the West, because that's why when it came to the German and the Germany having the Ruhr occupied by the Belgians and the French, the Germans didn't fight because they just knew they didn't have the military capability to do so. The France and Germany, and in France and Belgium, promised that they would never fight each other again. Now try not to laugh too hard. The Italians and the British were to guarantee this, okay, because it didn't directly affect them. They're to be a bit of an honest broker. There they signed it in the, they were negotiating in the courthouse of Locarno, which still stands. I did a video there about, my goodness, about 11 years ago. It was ratified by the Reichstag, by an overwhelming vote, ratified in the United Kingdom by the House of Commons by, again, a huge vote, 375-13, one of the most popular things ever passed. And that was it. But the Czechoslovaks and the Poles were somewhat more confident because they had a military alliance with Germany. Obviously, the Czechoslovaks didn't realize that Germany's going to throw them under a bus. So that, I mean, a French journalist professed herself to be drunk with joy, thinking that permanent peace had been assured. It paved the way for Germany to be readmitted to the League of Nations the following year, and indeed on the Council of the League. That's the opinion of the Security Council of the United Nations. And Stresemann even got the Nobel Prize for Peace. So Germany's readmission to the Committee of Nations was guaranteed. So that's why it's so significant. It was signed because the sides wanted to ensure that there would be peace. The Germans wanted to get some of their land back. And they were seemed to be more trustworthy because they were honest enough to say that they didn't accept that eastern border. And there was a significant German ethnic communities in Western Poland or in the Sudetenland, which is the very west of what's now the Czech Republic and so forth. Goodness. So very few people thought there was going to be a world war only 14 years later. So why'd the whole system fail? I suppose really non-enforcement. It's kind of, we see it playing out in Ukraine. It's too risky. It's too much of a sacrifice to actually uphold these treaties. So therefore aggressors get away with it and we make crime pay. So sadly, I can't remember who said it. Those who don't learn the lessons of history are condemned to repeat their mistakes. Right. Thank you for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon. Donate to PayPal, georgecallan7@gmail.com. Goodbye.